We Will Not Be Tamed, a Texas Parks and Wildlife Foundation podcast that encourages all Texans to get involved in conserving the wild things and wild places of our state.
Hello, this is Lydia Saldana with the Texas Parks and Wildlife Foundation, and I'm thrilled to have Captain Christy Vales on the line with us. She's a Texas game warden and she heads the canine unit. Captain Vales, thanks for being with us.
Yes, thank you for having me.
So I understand that your partner Ruger has retired.
He has, and he's been really enjoying it. I've never seen him take so many naps, but very, very well deserved. But yes, he started in 2013, and he had a really good career.
Yeah. So what's he doing right now?
He is actually taking his mid-afternoon nap right now.
The life of Ruger, huh? We've heard of Riley. This is the life of Ruger.
Yes. But
so he was your first partner, right? You've not had another canine. He was your first partner. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. So the research on our canine program started in 2013, and that was essentially initiated by our former Colonel Craig Hunter. Craig Hunter and I had visions about the canine team when he was the lieutenant colonel. So he really made it come to when he promoted to colonel, which we are all very thankful for.
So tell me a little bit about Ruger. I understand he's got a pretty interesting backstory.
Yes, I found this out, a couple months into the training. In 2013, we got all of our dogs from Pacific Coast Canine up in Washington. And I found out that he was actually seized in lieu of a search warrant for a meth dealer in the Washington State area. So he was seized during that search warrant.
So he kind of went from a life of crime to a crime fighter.
Yeah, he did. But, a lot of these vendors have folks that have an eye for a dog that would be good as a police search and rescue dog or a narcotics detection dog. So somebody saw something in him. I don't know if he made it to the animal shelter or, how he got discovered, but he did. And he served for our department for several years and was very successful.
So what makes a good canine for the Texas Parks and Wildlife specifically?
What we always tell people, just jokingly is that when you go to the pound to look for a dog, and you want to pick a dog and there's that sign on the kennel that says owner had to give up because they chewed the side of the house up, they chewed the couch up. We want that dog that just has so much drive and energy, and passion to get out and run, retrieve, find stuff. And that's what we're looking for a police dog. Kind of that out of control canine that just, they need to have a job.
So what's involved in training? I mean, I know that to become a Texas game warden, the training is 7 months long, 6 or 7 months long? What is the training process from the time a dog is identified as a canine to where their actual first assignment?
So each discipline, and we started our canine team and career up in Utah at Utah Post, which is like our Texas DPS. They have a lot of grants that come their way. So we were very fortunate, the foundation, I can't speak enough about how much they've worked for us in reaching out to the public to raise money to purchase the dog, send us to the training. So for that, we're definitely forever grateful. But the training in Utah, is 8 weeks for each discipline. So that would be 8 weeks for search and rescue. And then you would take a break, come back in 8 weeks for wildlife detection, cadaver detection, or narcotics. So, we still model that today. We no longer go to Utah because we have instructors and judges on the team. So we can completely train in-house, but the training is still 8 weeks for each discipline.
So is each dog trained in all of the disciplines or do they specialize?
They specialize. So our newest dogs and discipline on the team are the cadaver dogs or human remains. And that's a single discipline because they will search land, water, vehicles for blood evidence, houses, So that's the only thing they do is the human remains work. And then the search and rescue, all the other dogs are search and rescue and or narcotics detection or wildlife. So we don't mix the wildlife and narcotics detection together. Those are separate. And then those dogs also do search and rescue.
So what was Ruger's specialty?
He was narcotics and search and rescue.
So do you know, I mean, did you keep track, like how many missions did he go on? Do you have information like that? And I imagine you've got some war stories you could share with us. Maybe some memorable ones.
Yeah, we definitely do. You know, and I apologize, I don't have those numbers together, but we keep very, we track our deployments because a lot of our cases will go to court. You know, so anytime we deploy our dogs, whether we get them out of the truck or not, we document that request, you know, that way we can see where the needs are across the state. So we keep very, very accurate records. To give you a number of how many he's gone on since 2013, it's definitely going to be in the hundreds, if not more. But you know, one case that, you know, really blew my mind, is Austin Police Department called for a article search of evidence, which was a firearm, and the case was 2 years old. And they got, you know, information from somebody that wanted to reduce their sentence in jail. So we had a really good search area, but Ruger actually found that weapon within like 8 minutes of starting the search. And that weapon had been out there for 2 years. Wow. And it was covered up with dirt, with leaves. Once he alerted and started to indicate on it, which is like his final response, he'll put the evidence between his front feet, his paws, and just down on it. I could barely see it. So that case really, you know, the ability of these dogs is just amazing.
So when he alerts and then he indicates, which is all very professional law enforcement speak, describe what that's like.
So an alert could be, it could be different for every dog, but some of the elements are the same. So an alert would be the tail starts wagging, you know, it picks up, their breathing changes, their posture changes a little bit, their ears may, you know, change in position, and they start working what we call a scent cone. So a scent cone is essentially, if you can imagine that weapon out in the woods, it's going to have a cone that once the dog hits that cone, you start seeing those changes of behavior. And really what that's excitement that, you know, their body's giving off different changes of behavior because they know that odor they're smelling is gonna give them a toy. It's gonna give them reward. It's gonna give them praise from their handler, you know? So, and then the final response is once they get to the strongest source of odor, the item, then they're going to indicate on it. And that's a what we call a final response. And it could be a sit, a down, a bark, or a scratch.
So in that example that you gave, he indicated, or he alerted, and then he indicated. And then what did you do? Did you dig where he pointed, or how did you get your hands on the gun?
Well, because it was evidence and I could actually start to see the butt of the gun, the handle, before he started to go, you know, indicate on it. You know, at times in the field, a true deployment, because it's evidence, you know, it could be dangerous for Ruger to start pawing or going, you know, messing with the firearm. So I saw it and I praised him and I pulled him back and gave him a huge reward, but we won't touch it. I called the APD investigator, the detective. We'll secure it, stand by it, maybe take an initial picture of it to get the GPS coordinates, and then I'll wait for them to come retrieve it.
So what kind of reward does Ruger, what rewards did you give him?
You know, Ruger, he loves to please and play with really any toy. But usually it's a ball on a rope or a tug toy. And we just sit there and play. So that's why it's real important. You want a dog that, has a desire to play. You know, if they don't want to play with a toy or they don't enjoy the hunt, you know, the game of finding the person or the object, then you're going to spend your whole career trying to convince that dog that this is actually a fun thing to do. You know,
well, I've had the pleasure of meeting Ruger a couple of times, so I can attest to his high energy. And I think, you know, we've done a couple of phone calls over the past, you know, months and years, and I always hear Ruger in the background. So this is very odd to be doing a conversation with you and not hearing Ruger. So I was hoping he would take part, but we'll see if he wakes up or not.
Yeah, he will. He's actually awake right now. He's moved to the office chair. So he's awake. He's wondering while I'm sitting. He thinks I'm talking to him, I think. So I think he's a little confused because I don't have my phone in my hand.
So he's retired. He gets treats. Is he binge watching any television shows or anything like that?
No, not yet. We've been going on a lot of walks, and his hiking is picked up. So, you know, he's just enjoying being a dog. I don't quite think he knows he's retired yet. Unfortunately, when I have to, and I'm going to try to ease into it, you know, not taking him with me, but you know, when I start going to work and getting in that uniform, that's when he turns it on. So the first situation where I can't take him, that's when it's probably going to hit home to him that, you know, he's going to be a little confused why he's not going with me.
You both are going to cry, right?
Oh, I think so. Yeah, I think so.
So can you share with us why he retired? I know that you retire dogs for different reasons, and it's usually age related, but can you share with us what Ruger's situation is?
Yeah. And, you know, and Ruger is 9. So he's, you know, he was having some back issues. So let's say if he didn't have those back issues, he was probably a year and a half out from officially retiring, you know, 10 and a half years old for a search and rescue dog in Texas with the heat. It really is hard on him, you know? So he was having some back issues, with his disc that we, you know, I did my due diligence and took him to some specialist, and, you know, we tried to medicate it, but through training and deployments, I was noticing, you know, he was still in pain, certain signs that, you know, that he was showing and kind of yelp it out at different movements he would make. So, you know, I went back to the vet, to the specialist, and it was actually a neurologist, and she, you know, she was very honest with me and said, you know, if Ruger were a household pet, she would not recommend this surgery because it's so intense. So to me, if Ruger were maybe 3 or 4 years old, yes, I would definitely consider the surgery. But the recovery time is months, and he may have only come back at maybe 60%. So at 9 years old, I just didn't feel it was fair to him to do that.
He's worked hard, and he deserves to retire.
Yes, he does.
So, and of course, he's staying with you, right? I mean, he's going to live out the rest of his life with you.
Yes, we as handlers, there's actually a transfer of ownership form that we all fill out and get approved. And each handler has to go through the steps of, you know, articulating why it's time for their dog to retire. And when you sign over that form, or sign that form, and supervisor signs it as well, then, you know, all the liability for the state and requirements to buy food and vet bills, that all transfers to the handler now.
Okay. So now Ruger's not the first Texas game warden canine that has retired. Is that right?
That's correct. So we've had one handler that promoted to captain, and then we had another handler that their dog was not far out from retiring, and they chose, you know, they chose not to get another dog, which is, you know, there's a lot that goes into this. And if you, you know, if you have small kids or a family or, you know, anything else going on in your life at that moment, to start a new dog, it's a huge commitment.
Yeah.
You know, so I would much rather, you know, a handler on my team be very, you know, honest with themselves and their family and the team once it becomes time to get that second dog.
Because as a canine, are you on call all of the time?
Oh, there he is. He's waking Ruger. Up.
Hi, Ruger. Awesome.
Yeah, he's awake from his slumber. He's
ready to play.
Yeah.
Um, So, okay, I lost, Ruger made me lose my train of thought. What was, we were talking about dogs retiring.
Yes.
And of course you started, I mean, you've been promoted into the captain position and you chose as captain to continue being a dog handler. Are you going to get another dog or what are you going to transition out of that?
You know, well, to go back, I want to properly announce the two dogs. Ruger trusted me too. But Canine Cash, Cash retired with Marcus Vela, who promoted to captain. And then Gus, David Thorne's dog, he retired as well. And David, you know, he made the very difficult decision to not get a second dog. And he returned back to the field within the area and district that he was in to just fall back into, you know, field game warden without a canine.
Okay.
Go ahead. So to answer your question, Ruger, you know, and I hate to speak because his head's getting really big, but, you know, he was a very, very good dog. Like, he just truly, truly enjoyed what he did. So when I promoted to captain, he made it easy. You know, I can't ever really recall having any major issue with him that I had to work through. Like, he just decided he didn't want to search for a person anymore. He didn't want to find narcotics. He's always just had that passion to do it. So as a supervisor working him, I'm not going to say it wasn't difficult, but to start a new dog, it would be very, very hard on, you know, my home life and, you know, personal life, family, and work too, because I've got my captain duties, and to start a brand new dog would, it would definitely be a lot.
And you got Ruger.
Yes, and I have Ruger at home watching me train this new dog, which he would get really pouty and, you know, who knows. So it just, you know, I really enjoyed it. It is, you know, to think about not running a dog is just, it truly breaks my heart, but it's the right choice.
Yeah. So you mentioned Cash and Gus and Ruger retiring, and that's a good segue to talk about kind of what's involved in replacing the canines and what Texas Parks and Wildlife Foundation through the Gear Up for Game Wardens program is doing to kind of help help that transition. So you want to talk a little bit just about what that transition is when one retires out? Do you have them waiting in the wings, or how does that work? How do you replace those retiring canines?
So with David and Marcus, they, you know, they're no longer on the team. So we would hire a new handler and go through a selection process. And that's where our two cadaver dogs came in, Joni Owen and Chrissy Thompson, with their dogs Bosch and Dexter. So we replaced them with an entirely new team.
Okay.
But we currently have a dog now on the team that is, you know, each handler has to project as best they can that their dog may have a good, healthy year left to work. Mm-hmm. So once we get to that point, that current handler will start searching for a second dog and start training that dog while their dog is still active. That way we don't have a void somewhere in the state of Texas where we don't have a search and rescue dog to respond, or a wildlife dog or narcotics, you know. So there's going to be an overlap of training for that handler.
Okay. And I know that the Parks and Wildlife Foundation, we're working right now to raise funds to replace 7 retiring canine units for a cost of about $70,000. And happily so far, we've have over 70 gifts, over $26,000, close to $27,000, leaving a little bit over close to $44,000 left to raise. And I would remind anybody who's listening that we're accepting donations for that. And y'all can go to the Gear Up for Game Wardens website to do that. And can you talk a little bit about what goes into the cost of you know, getting a new dog and getting them trained?
Sure. So when we first started, you know, in 2013, the cost of what we call a green dog, which is a dog that has no formal training at all. You know, they're coming as a green dog with that high drive, high hunt drive, et cetera. That dog that particular type of dog would have been 45 to 5,500 back in 2013. So now what we're seeing is the dogs are anywhere from, you know, 6, 7, all the way up to 10,000, depending on the level of training they have. You know, once you get them from the vendor. So,
and why is that cost gone up so much?
You know, there's a couple things. I mean, just, you know, the economy, I mean, just, you know, as years go by. And another major thing that we're seeing is a lot of your federal agencies like TSA, ATF, and those types of agencies, when they're working in the airport ports, they used to have a combination of, you know, German Shepherds, Mals, Dutch Shepherds, and Labs. Well, because of the way, as they say, the way the pointy ear dogs look, the Belgian Malinois, the Shepherds, they just have that look. You know, some may call it aggressive, or people may think they're bite dogs, you know, when in a sense they're bomb dogs or narcotic dogs, you know, in the airport. So they have a policy now that they have to have Labs or sporting breed dogs. So that has really made the demand increase, and we're definitely feeling the effects of it. It's very hard to come by the type of sporting breed that we need.
So on top of the cost of just the dog, then there's the gear. Can you kind of talk us through the kind of gear that each dog needs?
Sure. So, you know, with each canine, you know, there's a lot of things that they need to successfully do their job and be safe at home. One of the major purchases is an at-home kennel. You know, so the dog can be kenneled at home, maybe an office kennel to bring in during the elements. You know, each handler will have a lot of deployment equipment, like a, you know, backpack, first aid kit. The dogs all need a tracking collar with a handheld GPS. So when they are away from us searching in a wooded area, we can keep track of them. And we often use that track in court cases. You know, if they located a deceased person or evidence or even a missing person or tracking somebody. So that equipment, and then, you know, the vet bills, the food, the collars, the harnesses, you know, all that really starts to add up.
Yeah. And that's why this fundraising effort is so important, on top of all the other, you know, obligations that the department has for just outfitting the game wardens. You know, this is something that we hope we can bring to the table. And we know whenever we try to raise money for the canine unit, we always have a great response. I remember we did a little fundraiser for the cooling vests. This has got to be about 3 or 4 years ago. And we put an email out, and within a couple of hours, we had raised all the money that we needed for the cooling vests for the dogs. So
Those things are amazing.
Yeah, we know that the people of Texas love to support their canine. Ruger is barking our name, isn't he?
yes, he thanks everybody for those cooling vests.
Yeah, that's awesome. You know, I also want to mention with that fundraising effort that every single penny that we raise through that, every single penny is going to go toward replacing those canine units and the equipment that they need. I think that's important to make that note. Every penny that we raise for that effort will go directly back to the canine unit. So
yes,
that's cool.
Yes, and definitely grateful for that. Like I said, from the start, you know, of 2012, when we started the research in 2013, I mean, the foundation has just been phenomenal. And with that being said, the people, the community donating, you know, for the replacement of canines or equipment for safety, I mean, it's just, you know, we're definitely grateful for that.
So you mentioned that you're training them in Texas now. Where does that training happen? Is that at the Game Warden Training Center?
What we'll do is, you know, we've done this twice with the cadaver dogs, but with the cadaver dogs, we did half a month, you know, half the 4 weeks here, and then they went to Utah to finish it out.
Okay.
You know, so this will be the first time that we're doing the entire 8 weeks. And we'll go to different locations. You know, the majority of the time with the cadaver dogs, we did the training at Bastrop State Park and traveled to different ranches, you know, around that area. So for this particular discipline, which we are going to start the interviews next Monday in the hands-on practical, you know, to see how they interact with the dogs, see if they have that natural ability, you know, to reward a dog and, and things of that nature. So we're going to start that process next Monday, and that will end on Wednesday, and we'll make our selection the end of next week.
So I guess I would guess you, I'm thinking there would be a lot of competition for that. Is that the case?
Yes, there is. We open it up to certain parts of the state based off of, the need in that area. And like with me, we opened it up to 50 air miles from Victoria office and 50 air miles from the San Antonio office. And a lot of that was stemmed from Ruger retiring. He's in the Austin area. So we really needed someone to pick up some coverage that can respond to Austin and up north. So if we could open it up to the entire state and not require that someone, a current game warden has to move, the numbers of applicants would definitely be higher. But unfortunately, as a captain, we look at, statistics, we look at the calls for service to see, what particular area would need a canine. But, I've always thought that, even we haven't had a canine way out in West Texas. So to me, that doesn't mean there's not a need there. We just don't have the dog there, have never had the dog around El Paso to see those numbers. But I truly believe, I would love to have a lot more canines on the team. So we have a dog in every corner of the state of Texas. And I think the numbers would go up, because if you've never had the canine there, you can't truly, you can't really truly assess the numbers and the need, if I'm making sense.
Mm-hmm. Like, that does make sense.
We got to give it an opportunity, and to have a high drive dog and a high drive game warden to get out there and make those contacts and start being called for those search and rescues, for those tracks, for those article searches, because those are happening everywhere around the state, So in a perfect world, we'd have 20 dogs.
We'll get there.
Yes.
We'll fundraise for these 7 first.
We'll get there. Yeah.
So, you've been doing cases with Ruger since 2013, mm-hmm. and Ruger just retired. This has to be a little bittersweet for you.
It is. I've already had to pass off some calls in this area to members of the team, but I just, Ruger's been on a lot of calls. Some have been somewhat dangerous, and he managed to make it all the way through his career. And he is the type of dog that if someone went running off a cliff and he thought he had his toy or her toy, his toy, that yes. individual, he'd mm-hmm. jump off the cliff. So in my mind, for him to make it all the way to his retirement, he's very blessed, because he was a very courageous dog, and he would go anywhere at any time to find whatever he was looking for. So, for that, I'm very fortunate.
That's a good boy.
he's had some close calls. He's busted 3 teeth, torn some toenails. He goes all in. So he's very lucky to be sitting here in the office right now chewing on a tennis ball. So
well, I know I speak from all your pals at the Texas Parks and Wildlife Foundation, but we wish Ruger the happiest of retirements.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you very much for
being with us. And again, just reminding folks, if y'all would like to contribute to help replace some of the retiring canines, just go to gearupforgamewardens.org.
Brought to you by Texas Parks and Wildlife Foundation. We Will Not Be Tamed calls us all to appreciate the wildness of Texas, the vastness of our Texas spirit, and why we should be inspired to conserve it. Find out more at wewillnotbetamed.org.